Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast, Andre Gallagher. Well, I guess I wasn't, didn't have a good reason to be worried, did I? That Detroit game. No Kate, no Quentin, no Doran. You do have to worry about Sasser, but eh. I apologize. I didn't know Kate wasn't going to play. Didn't know Doran. Actually, I think I did know Doran was going to play. I didn't mention him, though. Didn't know Quentin wasn't going to play. You still got a little bit of Fournier. Fournier did cross the hell out of Dante. But Dante, new Nick record for threes made in the game. Give the man credit. And we've been talking about how Dante wasn't on. He wasn't shooting the way he was before. Wasn't lights out the way he was before. Boy. So you saw a flashback that game, and the irony of doing it with Fournier on the floor, when you saw that he got close and you saw the Knicks were trying to get him the record, Fournier never played defense so hard in his life. Never played defense so hard in his life. I don't blame him. I saw people trying to clown him for it. I don't blame him. His Knick tenure didn't go as planned, but he does have a record. And why would he want somebody to break it? And with him on the floor when he can do something about it? Oh, absolutely not. And I'm sure he was pissed off when somebody else was guarding him when he actually broke the record. I'm sure he's pissed off about that. But Dante, I'm sorry, Evan, I've seen Evan play defense in these Pistons games against the Knicks that you didn't see when he was with the Knicks. Now, the one thing I would say about Evan, I think, Evan's on-ball defense the last 2 years, a little bit overstated how bad he was defensively on ball. Where he struggled most of the time was off ball. It was in the rotations. It was in turning your head and getting beat back door and stuff like that. Those are the type of things that used to get Cam Reddish too when he was here. When people kept talking about Cam Reddish's, or keep talking about Cam Reddish's defense with the Lakers. That's the one thing he struggles with the Lakers as well. You know, it's not so much the on-ball stuff, it's the off-ball stuff. And when Cam was with the Knicks, it was the way he played the screens. He got torched on screens a lot here when he was with New York. But Evan, you know, his defense, mano a mano, wasn't as bad as most people think it was. But, you know, that's not all you're doing in the NBA. And I think that's where people get confused. There's a lot of rotations, a lot of knowing your rotations, a lot of anticipating the outlet passes and getting out there to contest shots. And Evan sometimes, you know, he would get a little lazy, he'd get a little inattentive on those fronts. But, boy, last night, boy, he was locked in. He was locked in on Dante, boy. And you saw Dante try to apologize to him after the game, like, I'm sorry this had to, either I'm putting words in their mouth, but it was clear that's what it was. And Evan had the best response, saying, you know, don't worry about that, don't even think like that, et cetera, et cetera. And Evan had great things to say after the game. And you got to give Evan credit for his professionalism, going through a tough time here in New York. Outside of that whole spit on Tom Thibodeau rant he went on over the offseason, that people tend to forget about when they want to give him credit for his professionalism. He's been pretty good, and he didn't have to be like that. Now, I will say there were a couple situations where the Knicks needed him to play and he was out for personal reasons. I don't know if that was Tom Thibodeau giving him a break because he wasn't going to play him anyway or what, but there were quite a few occasions where the Knicks were down. Not even the situations where it was like, oh, we lost a couple players, you know, Evan probably will play, but games where it was like, oh, Evan has to play. And nope, Evan's out for personal reasons. So there's a few of those, but I get it. You know, he was having a hard time. And clearly him and Tibbs had some kind of issue. I think we assume too much sometimes that there were good basketball reasons why Evan wasn't playing, but it did seem that it got personal. And I will say that if we go back a season, we go back last year, there were times that Knicks needed Evan to step up, and they threw him out there, and he was a whole negative every time he stepped on the floor. I remember distinctly talking about it on this show. He would be terrible in the first half, and if he got time in the second half, a lot of times he'd be a little bit better. But it was a struggle for him. And it's easy to blame Tibbs for, you know, making it personal. But if you look at the numbers, it didn't support it. It didn't support him playing. And you saw the season turned around when he got benched. It's such a revisionist history to say that he shouldn't have got benched. The season turned around immediately. And then I think Evan brought up the fact that if you look at the record when he didn't play, it wasn't that much better when he didn't play. Well, that was because they hit another bad streak like a month or so later before Josh Hart came on the team. And then they were completely off the charts without him playing. So listen, Evan's going to fend for himself, but the numbers, they really don't support that, the decision to play him. And that was a problem with RJ too. They were just better when he wasn't playing. At the end of the day, they were a better team when he wasn't playing. I was watching Jonathan Macri and Fred Katz on the Nick Film School podcast. And Fred Katz said a lot of things. I'm going to reference that interview a few times on the show. But he said something that he put it in a line that I've been trying to explain when it came to RJ for quite some time. Because I've never been an RJ hater. But I also don't deny what I'm looking at on the floor. Some of you do that because you're fans of players and not the team. A lot of you. But the way he encapsulated the RJ situation was perfect to me. He said, and I'm paraphrasing, he said, RJ was at his best when the ball was in his hands, but the Knicks weren't. The Knicks were at their best when the ball wasn't in RJ's hands. And I think that's what a lot of you don't understand about professional basketball in general. I'm not saying I understand everything about it, but I think that's what highlight culture is. And I'm not putting all of that on RJ, but it's related. That's what highlight culture is that you guys see a guy be effective here and there, and you say, well, look how great of a player he is. You should let him play, right? Just like I see people, the Knicks are winning games, I see people asking for Shake Milton to play. And I get it. There's a part of me that, okay, I want to see him on the floor and see if he can, you know, see what he can do. But I also know that I'm not going to see anything in 2-3 minutes that is going to let me know that Shake Milton needs to play. And it was the same thing with Jacob Toppin. Where you're not going to see anything in 2-3 minutes that lets you know that he could play, good or bad. The Knicks are not in a situation where they should be experimenting with Shake Milton. They need to win games, right? They need to win games. But there is this calling, this is like this instinctive response that a lot of you have where you think you could just watch a guy for a couple minutes and you see talent, you see highlights, and you think that player is good, that player is solid, he needs to play more, he needs to have the ball in his hands, blah, 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 blah. It's the reason why so many Knicks fans are still talking about Alonzo Trier, right? Because Alonzo Trier, and it wasn't just a play here and there, it was over the course of time, you saw he had an ability to score, and you're like, oh, you know, why isn't he in the league, and blah, 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 blah. And there are some politics with Alonzo, but being an isolation player doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a winning player. You have to be efficient and you have to make winning plays to win games in professional basketball. It's not a pickup game. They can't just keep giving you the ball and thinking nobody's going to, you know, you're never going to make a bad play or you're going to make enough good plays to win the game. Most players aren't that good. I think the closest thing you've seen to the term is called heliocentric. The closest thing you've seen to success from a heliocentric standpoint where the game all revolves around one player and all of the decisions he makes was a year or so with James Harden and Luka Doncic. Right? So when the ball has to be in somebody's hands for them to be good, And they don't make enough good plays, enough efficient plays to win consistently in this league, then you can't have the ball in their hands all the time. And right now we're in like this, we're in this time now where there was nothing bad with Carmelo Anthony, but we kind of gave him sainthood. And as great as Carmelo Anthony was, and we did see him towards, we got some tail end of his career stuff. But as great as he was in his prime, the problem started to become with Carmelo that he was very reliant on his mid-range jump shot. And he shot about 45% from the field. And you cannot win when the whole offense surrounding a player is built solely on their mid-range jump shot and they're shooting 45%. You can't win that way. Now, if you mixed it up, and he did this earlier in his Knick tenure, but later in his Knick tenure, this is what he was, and it was true for Kobe Bryant too at the end of his career. If you mix it up and you get that mid-range jump shot sometimes and you're shooting close to 50%, then sure. You can live off that. You've seen great scorers in the league right now, like Durant and Booker. A lot of these guys shoot mid-range jump shots. It's perfectly fine if you're shooting close to 50% on them, but not when you're shooting 45% or less. You think that's not a significant difference, but it is, because teams can find ways to be more effective scoring the ball than relying on your mid-range jump shot, and it can include other players, which helps them get in rhythm. It helps them read the floor so they can make plays for other people because they're seeing the ball, they're touching the ball. So when people talk about the Knicks offense, that's one of the things that you don't, a lot of people who criticize it don't get. Now, the Knicks offense without Randle has been towards the bottom of the league, but it's been good enough to win games for the most part. When you look at the record without Randle, it's also without OG, it's also without Hartenstein, and some of those, a lot of those losses were without Hartenstein, right? So it's not simply about Randle, it's about Randle and OG, or Randle, OG, and Hartenstein, et cetera. But so the offense has been good enough to win a lot of games. Not every game, but a lot of games. And that's not just because of Jalen Brunson. The big part of it is Jalen Brunson. It's because you've seen great games from Dante. You've seen great games from Josh Hart. And now you're seeing great games from Hartenstein because by trying to play the right way, Jalen is the leader. He's hitting you with a myriad of shots. He's hitting you from three. He's hitting you from the mid-range. He's hitting you from the short mid-range in the paint. And he's hitting you at the front of the rim. And because he's scoring on all of those levels, in order to stop him, you have to implore different kinds of defenses and have defenses attacking him from different angles on the floor, which opens up things for other people. So when he collapses the defense and the ball starts to move, now other people are touching it and now they can operate to their own advantages, what they're good at. But when you just have a guy who catches the ball 15 feet from the basket and just turns around and shoots every single time, that's not good enough. It's not going to do it, right? You might see him score 35 points, but the way he scored it is in a way that doesn't help other players be effective. And because he's not extremely efficient with it, the defense doesn't need to collapse and leave people open and double team you, et cetera. They're willing to live with what you're doing, right? I think it was what's his name, Jarrett Dudley. Is it Jarrett Dudley, who was kind of a pain in the butt defender, talked a lot of noise, especially about the Knicks. But he said it one time. He's like, basically, when you're guarding Carmelo, it's like you live with what he's doing. You know he's just going to shoot it in your face and either going to make it or miss it, and you live with it. You don't start to, when he was prime Melo, yeah, you send double teams to get the ball out of his hands because he could take you to the basket and score layups and dunk on you and all kinds of other stuff. But when he's just shooting mid-range jump shots, it's like, yo, we good. We can live off your 45%. To bring this back to RJ, the way RJ was attacking, he was either going to shoot a three and he shot a low percentage, or he was going to drive to 5 feet in front of the rim and put up a little floater or something. And teams were like, okay, we good with that. Especially better defensive teams. I told the story about how when I went to the Phoenix game, RJ kept trying to take the ball into Nurkic. Why can't I say his name all of a sudden? Nurkic. Into his chest. And Nurkic, he got called for a foul once, but he sent the ball out of bounds twice. And he turned to RJ. He's like, why do you keep doing that? Like, he was like, for real, for real. Like, why do you keep doing that? You just keep running into my chest. Why? Like, you know what? Everybody knows what you're going to do. So it's not working. But yeah, if RJ had the ball more and he got to run high screen and roll and he got into a rhythm, then yeah, you're seeing in Toronto, and especially if you have a center who's not in the paint all the time, which is what he had with Mitchell Robinson. Yeah, sure, you can be effective. Good for you. But on a team that has players that are better than you, well, at least one, you can debate if you want to debate the other, fine. You have one player who's better than you, but you definitely have another player who's higher in the pecking order. When the ball found him, he was not effective. Not enough. And he was inconsistent. So, yeah, when RJ has the ball, he can be a more effective player, but the team wasn't more effective winning. And you can try to find some nuance to argue that and doubt that. But just know that last year, RJ played more minutes, and I detailed this around June of last year, June, May, June of last year. RJ Barrett, in the minutes that he played, was one of the least efficient, least effective basketball players in the NBA. I went down every statistical category. I compared it to his teammates, and I compared it to the league. And guys who played as many minutes as he did, he was at the bottom of the league. You can't blame that on other people. It's just like when people try to, and you know I'm a fan of Quentin Grimes, people try to blame Quentin Grimes' struggles on Tibbs in this quote unquote system. But then you saw Dante go out there and light it up. And then you say, well, Dante's doing this because everybody's hurt. Dante started two games early in the season and scored, I think out of it was like three games he started, and two of them he scored like 25, 30 points. So it's obvious. It was obvious it wasn't just the system. That you had to be a more confident basketball player because it's a read system. It's a read system. I'm not saying it's genius, but it is a read and react system. So the better you are as a basketball player, the more effective you can be in it. Are there some tweaks like Josh Hart wanted to have the ball in his hands more, so he put the ball in his hands more. There are little tweaks like that, and so Josh Hart can push the ball in transition and that stuff like that. Yes. But in the half court, it becomes a read and react system. So the more that you read the floor and react as a basketball player, the better quality shots you get. Now, if you look at some of Dante's shots, even in the Pistons game, it comes from relocating. It comes from reading the floor, and finding passing angles, so that the passer can get you the ball, and as soon as the defender turns his head and leans the wrong way, the passer can get you the ball. That's what a competent basketball player sees. You know, it comes from Josh Hart attacking a closeout, getting to the middle of the paint, and then elevating and waiting for the defense to commit to, if the defender has to guard two guys, waiting for him to commit. And sometimes faking that defender out so you can make the right pass. And then it's up to the receiver to create a passing lane for Josh Hart. Like, you have to do those things. And if you don't do them, then you're not going to get the ball. And Quentin just didn't do it. And also in the interview that Fred Katz had, he mentioned that Quentin just doesn't have the confidence that Dante has. And that, again, that might come from being a more accomplished player. It might come from just personality. It might come from, you know, him having experience with some great, great players around the league. It may be all of those things, right? But ultimately, Dante's like, I'm a shooter, and all I need is a little bit of space, and I'm going to shoot. And I'm not going to think about it. And Fred Katz kind of put it in perspective. He took 20 threes in that game. And he took like 20 threes in a game a few weeks ago where he didn't shoot the ball well at all. And I saw a lot of people criticizing him and like, I'm not criticizing you. We need shoot. That's what you do. You shoot. Okay. That's how you do it. You shoot. That's what you're here to do. And you're not going to put a cap on you. You're going to be trusted because you understand basketball and you're a competent basketball player. And the Knicks needed it because they didn't have their scorers and they were shorthanded, etc. They needed it. But Fred Katz made the point. Quentin Grimes wasn't taking 23s in the game. He's just not wired that way. You saw Tom Thibodeau talk about this in the press conference, the post-game press conference. He said they asked him about, you know, did you make any changes to the offense to allow Hartenstein for the offense to go through him a little bit more? And he said, no, it's the same offense. And sometimes Tibbs is playing in word games. It's the same offense, but it's like there are different options and reads in it. And I don't think a lot of fans just see isolations with Jalen Brunson, but you don't see some of the off-ball stuff that the Knicks do, like the dribble handoffs and the back doors, and you don't see it. That's why so many of you can't wait for Mitchell Robinson to come back and start, because you don't see the differences that Hartenstein is bringing to the offense. And Tibbs said this in the post-game press conference. He said, it's not so much changes to the offense, it's just that Hartenstein is such a good passer that when he goes and he makes reads and he gets to the spots on the floor he needs to get to, he catches that ball and guys cut harder because they know they're going to get the ball if Hartenstein sees him. So they cut harder. And that's something that you hear discussed, or you don't hear it discussed in basketball enough, is that guys don't move around as much when they don't think they're going to get the ball. Say, why am I sprinting to this spot if I know the ball's not coming? I'm going to walk. I'm going to trot. Because that's just the way guys are, just petty, number one. Number two, it's human nature. There's no reason. I don't see the reason to sprint to this spot. I don't see a reason to set this screen really, really hard and sacrifice my body, because the passes are not being made. The plays are not being made off of it. And of course, that's frustrating to coaches. But when someone is making those plays, they are making those passes, they are making those reads, you're going to do those things more. So imagine if you have players on a team who, when they catch the ball and you cut back door, they never throw that pass. So what happens? I'm not going to cut that back door quite as hard. I'm not going to sell the V-cut where I act like I'm going this way and then I go the other way, because the ball's not coming. I'm not going to do it. So those opportunities offensively that the Knicks don't get. They don't get the backdoor layup, or if a player comes to help, they don't get the weak side pass and shot. Those opportunities, they just aren't there. And when you hear me talk about habits, practicing good habits on the floor, right? When you stop having that kind of rhythm and flow because guys aren't making the right basketball play, and then you have guys stop cutting as hard and stop setting as hard or as effective screens, then your offense doesn't get the same opportunities. And now it's uphill. You're swimming upstream because you guys don't do the basics and fundamentals the right way. And it's not just because they don't know them like you do have with some players in the league. It's because the right basketball play isn't made, so confidence isn't there, so they just aren't in the habit of doing it. And you heard me talk about this two shows ago. Hartenstein getting the ball when he has advantages at the front of the rim more often is a habit the Knicks need to get into, because they need to get into a habit of putting the ball in his hands more where he can make a decision, because he makes good ones. Having Hartenstein on the floor 35, 40 minutes, which he really can't do right now. He's not on the minutes restriction anymore, but they're still managing him, is vital to the Knicks' offense, especially when Mitchell Robinson is the alternative, because Mitchell's not making those plays. And the Knicks know that. But they cannot, the players know that, but they cannot get into bad habits the way they have gotten into when they play big minutes with Mitchell Robinson. Right, good habits, good smart players who understand how to play the game. They make the right plays. There's magic to that. And you hear a lot of Knicks talk about that, but it's easy to talk about it. It's harder to do because you don't have everybody on your team who's doing it. Yeah. But let's talk about Mitchell Robinson, who is listed as questionable tonight against the Raptors, that means that he's going to be back within the next couple days unless he has a setback. So all will be revealed very soon with Mitchell Robinson. I doubt he plays tonight. It's possible they play him tonight just to get his feet wet. You know what I mean? Like, just throw him out there. The Raptors, everybody's out. Not going to make the same mistake I made with RJ. Detroit. Everybody's out. Barnes is hurt. IQ lost his uncle. God bless. RJ still dealing with the loss of his little brother. And God bless him as well. They just have some injuries. Pirtle's banged up. You know, so again, they need to win this game tonight. So maybe they throw Mitchell Robinson out there just to get, you know, a couple minutes against, you know, competition isn't that tough. You know what I mean? Maybe they throw him in to get up and down the court. I think that would be wise. If he's questionable, that means he could play. Usually guys are questionable because you're worried about some kind of soreness or, you know, nagging injury. You want to see how it feels. So if he feels okay, then he should, if this game is put away, then he should probably get in the game for a couple minutes. You know, maybe that's not the grand opening that you want for Mitchell Robinson, but, you know, I think there's probably some merit to doing that. I doubt they do it, though. Now, the Spurs, however, who the Knicks play after the Raptors, they play them on Friday. That's a game where that's not really a trap game. The Spurs can beat you. They're not a good team, but they can beat you. That's a game the Knicks need to win, bottom line. But one thing at a time. I was worried about Detroit. It turned out to be nothing. You didn't see a great game from Brunson once again. I hope that's not a trend, but, you know, I think, you know, we'll see. We'll see in this Raptors game if Brunson can, you know, get, you know, return to form a little bit. But I see Knicks fans are starting to be alerted to the Orlando Magic's presence, right? There's been a lot of dismissing of the Orlando Magic. It's the same way people dismiss the Cavs because they don't really watch. So they just think they're not good enough to do anything. Now, I do think the Knicks don't even have to be fully healthy to beat Orlando. That's not a disrespect to Orlando. That's a matchup thing. I won't go into that right now, but the main reason why you want to stay out of the 4-5 is not to avoid Orlando, is to avoid Boston in the second round. That's just, we talked about that ad nauseum. But in terms of Orlando catching the Knicks, it's a possibility, but I really can't. It's hard. Don't look behind you. There are a lot of guys behind you that could catch you, really. So it's hard for me to explain my view on the Magic. It's hard for me to imagine that the Magic will overtake the Knicks. I don't think that they will overtake the Knicks. But they could. But let's look at their schedule. They play the Warriors. The Warriors are struggling. They play the Warriors today. And they play the Clippers. They play the Grizzlies. They play the Blazers. They play the Pelicans. Then the Hornets. Then the Bulls, then the Rockets, then the Bucks, Sixers, and Bucks again. They got a tough little road there. So let's do their record. So at Warriors at Magic, the Warriors got to get right. They're fighting for a playoff spot, but got to give that to the Magic. So that's 1-0. Clippers at Magic, very possible the Magic win that game, but I'm just gonna say 1-1 there. 2-1 with the Grizzlies. I'm sorry. 2-1 with the Grizzlies, 3-1 with the Blazers, at Pelicans, we're gonna call that a loss, that's 3-2, at Hornets, that's 4-2, Bulls at Magic, let's say 5-2, Magic at Rockets playing really, really well, let's say 5-3, Magic at Bucks, let's say 5-4, Magic at Sixers are fighting for their lives, second to last game of the season, I'm gonna say 5-5 there, right? And then Bucks at Magic. So I'll give them one of those games. So I'll say 6-5. So if I did that right, I might have lost count somewhere in there. They should be right. It's possible, but they're going to be right around 500, maybe a game or so above. When we went through the Knicks schedule, I didn't go game. I think I went game to game. I'm not sure. But I basically said the Knicks should. They're looking at probably three losses, maybe four. That's good enough for the Knicks to get by, and it's the same thing for the Cavs. You know, if anybody slips up there, the Magic had the tiebreaker on the Knicks. So, and they have it on the Cavs. So, hey, if they're able to pull it off, give them credit, because they don't have any cupcakes down the stretch. I shouldn't say they don't have any, but, you know, they don't have a cupcake schedule. If they pull it off, good for them. You know, I'm kind of mad at Knicks fans who are just now, oh, the Orlando Magic, look at the standings. The Knicks have to win games. Yeah, I've been saying that while y'all were talking about let's rest everybody for the playoffs. No, they got to win games. They got to win games. And don't look, you know, I think the Cavs are still playing. I think they play the Hornets tonight. That's a win for them, you know. So that's fine, but we went through their schedule. They're basically neck and neck in wins that you could, wins or losses that you can assume for them. Let me see. Donovan Mitchell is returning to action on Friday. So that's good for them. And Friday they play the 76ers. So, hey, that's one of those games they very well could lose without Donovan. So that's big news. And I talked about this the last show. Donovan was going to return this week. You know, no need to bring him back against the Hornets. You should be able to take care of the business there. Take care of business there. So, hey, win games. That's it. It starts tonight. Win the game that's in front of you. Take care of business. You worry about the Spurs on Sunday. That's a team you should beat. But they're going to be a little bit of a headache. But take care of business. Take care of business. Not Sunday, Friday. And what is this? Breaking news from Woj saying that Mitchell Robinson is going to be active tonight. He's going to be active tonight. So maybe what I was talking about earlier actually comes to pass. If he's active tonight, then he should be playing. Why have him active and not play? He should be playing tonight. So listen, it's about habits. Win the game, and it's about habits. You're not going to get much from Mitchell. He's going to be tired after two or three times up the court. You know, you just want him. You want him to get into the habit of playing the game the right way. Said you saw what he said. He wanted to come up the bench because he can do more. All right, well, come do more. Take care of business. That's it. At Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, Andre Gallagher at The Watchers 7. Until next time.